Okay, my guest on Podcasting Them Softly right now is Luke LaFontaine. He's a very, very experienced stunt performer. Been in a lot of cool stuff. Everything from the Power Rangers to Iron Man. He's done lots of television. He's done Epic Movie. He's done First Strike, Blood and Bone, Hellbinders. Wow, Black Dynamite. Lots of cool stuff. The Sand. Oh, man. 48 Hours to Live, Savage Dog, Wicked Ways. The list goes on and on. Luke, thank you for being on Podcast and Softly, my friend.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk to you. Like I said, you got a list of credits here longer than both my arms. but can we start off? Can you tell us how you got into the biz?
Sure. Wow, that's a long time ago. Back in around 1984, I actually went to high school with John G. Avildsen's son.
Wow.
John G. Avildsen was the director of Rocky.
That's right.
And his son had said, "Hey, man, my dad's doing a new movie, and it's a martial arts picture, and you got to be in it." So I said, "Cool, I'm game." And that movie turned out to be The Karate Kid.
Fantastic.
And that was my first foray into film.
Wow.
And I went out to California, and I had originally been cast as the first guy in the tournament at the end of the movie to fight Ralph Macchio.
Okay, right.
But at that time, I was not 17 yet.
Right.
And the social worker came on set flipping out, and this was in the tournament sequence with like 30,000 people in the stands.
Right.
Said, "He's not allowed to be on film. He doesn't have an adult guardian." So, you know, and then the director proceeded to yell back at her, and I'm kind of sitting in the middle going, "I don't want people yelling over me in front of 30,000 people." And long story short, I didn't get that part. They stuck me in other parts of the movie.
Right.
I fought a bunch of the Cobra Kai in the tournament sequence.
Right.
And from then on, I moved out to California and started working in film.
Wow. What a wow. That, I mean, but that's a huge beginning. I mean, The Karate Kid is, well, it's a seminal movie, isn't it? It's a classic. It's you know, and recently I love that documentary about John Avildsen. It's a great.
John was a great man. He was a great director. He was a temporary mentor to me, and he was great to me on Karate Kid. He also let me come out and work with him on Rocky V.
Okay, well.
So I worked on Rocky V as one of his personal assistants, and tried like hell to get on the stunt team on Rocky V, and I wound up doing a lot of really weird, odd jobs on that picture, but one of which I wound up being Stallone's son's art teacher for 2 weeks. It was an odd time, but John Avildsen was a great man. He was a great director, and you know, he'll be sorely missed.
It's nice to think that people remembered him anyway, but it's nice that people will probably, thanks to this documentary, rediscover some of the wonderful films that he made. Of course, Rocky and The Karate Kid, I mean, you know, what a beginning. And it just went on and on and on. So a lot of television as well, martial law, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a lot of Power Rangers.
Seasons of Power Rangers.
Wow. So that was like the day job for a while, a bit working on Power Rangers.
Oh yeah, it was the day job for a while. There was a lot of learning and training there. I wound up being fortunate enough to become a member of Alpha Stunts through Koichi Sakamoto and Katsuro Koike and Akihiro Noguchi, and you know, I worked with those guys for 8 or 9 years. And we got to do a lot of great work together. I mentored under them for a while, and they trusted me. I worked on Drive with Mark DeCosco, so I wound up doubling the lead villain on that.
Wow.
And did one of the fights with Mark. And I did a lot of great work under Alpha Stunts. And I was super, super proud to be involved with them, because there were a lot of things that we did were sort of the beginning of the cutting edge when, you know, the Hong Kong style was coming over into L.A.
Right, right.
And, you know, there was a lot of work on Power Rangers. I've done well over 350 episodes of television on that.
Wow.
And I'd have to say I've probably been in over 300 or 400 monster suits.
Yeah.
as well as playing two Rangers.
There you go. So you're one of those poor guys that gets the crap kicked out of him in those big rubber.
Oh yeah, there was nothing like being in a giant rubber suit in 110 degree weather in California, and in a suit that you can't see out of, fighting five people at once.
Oh yeah.
It got your skills up there.
Yeah.
Different. You know, it's one thing when you're fighting one person, but when you got to fight five Power Rangers at once.
Yeah. I was about to ask you, what is it like? Because it always looks like those guys. I remember seeing a few bits of episodes here and there. It always looks like those poor monster guys are sort of stumbling around, and then they kind of like they're just kicked from every side, and they're just kind of like. Oh.
It wasn't easy because what a lot of people, especially the new generation, what a lot of them don't know is that we replaced about 80 to 90% of the Japanese footage as we went along through the seasons.
Right.
So a lot of people are under the misconception that most of it was Japanese footage and that we only did, 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. And that's not the case. As early as season 3, we were reshooting a lot of the footage. And by the middle of the seasons, we were doing about 90% of the footage
that
was used in the episode. So, we were replacing all the fight footage. And we were adding stunt work, and we were adding car work. There was a lot of work on that show. We had a lot of other seasoned stuntmen that were, well veterans to us, coming on the show and just with their jaws agape saying, "You guys do this every day? You start at 6 a.m., you fight for 3 or 4 hours, and then you go get in cars and do car stunts, and then there's gas explosions, and then you hang off buildings, and you guys do high falls." So yeah, we get that all done in one day, almost every day.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was a training ground like no other. It just sharpened our skills to the point where when we had to go on another movie and just do fight scenes, we were almost laughing about it because it was so easy.
Yeah. As I was just talking to David Noe about this, every time a big action spectacle sort of comes out today, or a very successful action movie, they bring up the question yet again: stunt performers, or as David very eloquently and I think very appropriately described it, as action designers should be recognized with the likes of all these award ceremonies and like the Oscars and whatever. It always seems
it's
to come
very
up.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
Because I think, and I agree 110%, that the Oscars, a lot of the major award ceremonies should be recognizing the category of stunt work and action design. But there's unfortunately, there's a lot of political roadblocks there. And one of the main ones is, and people don't, really want to talk about this. One of the main ones, honestly, is the directors.
Right.
The directors of these big pictures don't want that given away because in their mind, it's taking a big chunk of their glory out because a lot of these directors want to take credit for the action in these films.
Right.
Even though in, 80 to 90% of the cases, they have nothing to do with it.
Right.
They come on, they say what they want, and then, we've got tons of, great second unit, stunt coordinators and action designers, people like J.J. Perry, people like Sam Hargrave, people like Clayton Barber, Chad Stahelski, who's moved on to directing major pictures like the John Wick series. These guys are really responsible for designing 99% of the action and making it happen. And
right.
So it's not going to be an easy uphill battle to really get the stunts and the stunt community recognized with the larger award ceremonies. I mean, I really wish that they would, but I think it's going to be a real, real tough uphill climb.
Right. There's a couple of credits, Luke, amongst yours that maybe you could tell us a little bit about your experiences on these films that I just sort of glanced through, films that I really enjoyed that you've worked on. One is a film that has a bit of a reputation as a great, how should we say, sort of one of those great sort of Hollywood hubris stories with Richard Kelly coming off the very successful Donnie Darko, and they basically gave him a blank check to go and make another movie. The movie he eventually made was Southland Tales, which pretty much, by all accounts, derailed him for a while there. What was your experience on Southland Tales as a stunt player?
Southland Tales, in my opinion, was an unrecognized movie of genius.
Yep.
It was a great film to work on. A number of great things happened on that film. I had already previously worked with Dwayne Johnson on The Rundown.
Okay.
And had a great time and you know, done a fight with him. And I was good friends with, you know, Tanawai. And Tanawai is, you know, Dwayne Johnson's cousin. And he's his permanent stunt double. And Tanawai was actually the one who hired me on to Southland Tales.
Right.
And I'm always going to be super appreciative for that because it was a great experience. Southland Tales was surreal.
Yes.
The concept and the story and what he was doing with that film was absolutely ahead of its time.
Yes.
By at least 5 or 10 years.
Yes.
And had he made that movie 5 years later, it would have been incredibly relevant.
Right, right.
I mean, he was literally ahead of his time on that film.
Yes, yes.
Majorly. And it was almost like he had a crystal ball.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of great stuff we did on that movie. And I actually, it was very funny because I was hired on for stunts, and Richard actually wound up giving me an acting part in the film.
Right. Wow.
And I was playing one of the sort of subversive terrorists, and he gave me this acting bit that was absolutely ad lib at the top of the stairs in one of the scenes when the SWAT guys are coming in, and Richard just goes, take my BlackBerry. He gives me his own BlackBerry, and he says, okay, I just want you to act your talking baby goo goo lovers talk with your girlfriend.
Right.
While you're guarding this, you know, hostage. And you know, I just sat there and said, well, I'm an actor as well as a stunt performer, and I ad-libbed this whole thing, and they said cut, and the crew lost it, and everybody was bawling laughing.
Yeah.
And, you know, a director comes over, and he goes, I love that, but let's do an alternate one. Now, I want you to be having an argument with your girlfriend, and you're pissed at her. But we do second take, and I do this ridiculous argument, you know, having this argument with her, and I'm sitting there going, what we're doing here is important, and don't second talk me, and don't belittle me, and, you know, I'm trying really hard. Do you have any idea how hard it is to get cat piss out of things? If your cat pisses on any of my stuff one more time, and we run through the whole thing,
yeah.
And he says, cut, you know, and I turn, and in the middle of that argument, the SWAT guy shoot me, and I go wrecking back through a doorway, and it wound up being a really, really funny bit, and it was all just because, you know, the director just sort of came up with it. We ad-libbed it right there.
Yeah.
And the whole picture was great to work on. I mean, like I said, it was very surreal.
Yeah.
And I knew when I was working on it, I was like, I'm getting a real vibe off this movie. This movie's going to be something.
Yeah.
And it's going to be weird. And I don't know if everybody's going to get it, but people who do get it are going to really see this is kind of a visionary sort of genius level movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of great things. I got to meet Christopher Lambert on that film.
Wow, yeah.
You know, the Highlander series. And
yeah, totally.
It was just really all around. It was a great experience. A lot of fun working on that picture.
Like you said, very much ahead of its time. I mean, I'm glad it's kind of getting rediscovered a little bit now. You know, but I mean, sadly, it didn't do anything for Richard at the time. It kind of derailed him a little bit. But like you said, it's a film that deserves to be, you know, people need to give it a day in court because it really is, like you say, more relevant. The more time went by, the more relevant it became. So
yeah, I mean, I think it'll continue to keep a following, and I think the following will grow because there's just too many genius level things in that movie. Richard really, I mean, the performance from Dwayne Johnson was hilarious. You know, Dwayne Johnson did some things in that movie that he hadn't done before, which were just a riot.
Yeah.
And the musical number with Justin was also just a great, great bit.
Yeah.
I just think that's one of these films that, you know, as it goes down in history, more and more people are going to recognize it. I mean, look, you know, Blade Runner didn't do well when it came out, and that's one of our greatest sci-fi films ever.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, totally. And speaking of a local filmmaking legend in Peter Weir. You did some work on Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World.
Yes, amazing experience. Again, you know, one of my favorite experiences, great movie to work on. Peter Weir was, an amazing genius level director. I'd gotten a call from Dan Speaker and Jan Bryant, and they wanted me to come on and be a part of the sword fight team, and they asked me if I would interview for the unarmed fight choreographer position.
Right.
So everything that wasn't involving swordplay, and I went and I had an interview with Doug Coleman, who is, another legend in the stunt business and a great stunt coordinator. And I interviewed with him, and Doug was like, okay, you got it. We all went down to Mexico and, just absolutely busted our ass for 3.5 months and, immersed ourselves in the film.
Yes.
And, it was almost like we all went back in time. Peter was just adamant about the film being 1,000% historically accurate. And it was the kind of film that we'd been dreaming of doing for a long time, because we were all, history buffs and, historical accuracy nerds, and we've been studying and researching all this historical swordplay and what it really was as compared to the Hollywood stuff. And here, we were given this chance to do all these really, really realistic, gritty, bloody fight scenes. And we were given the opportunity to shine, the stunt guys were all amazing. Doug was great. Dan and Jan worked really hard on it, and the fights, the fights really shined. And the whole film, I mean, it's probably the most historically accurate film on British Maritime Navy technique ever.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think there's a film that trumps that in terms of historical accuracy for what the British Navy was like.
Yeah.
And, from the costumes and the uniforms to, the gun, the cannon drills and everything, I mean, we really tried to go above and beyond and work on that movie, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
I wound up, getting to get a little closer to Russell Crowe, and, we goofed around, and I got the nickname Red Eye on that one because I got a massive eye infection right before we were supposed to do a sword fight.
Right.
Peter Weir, they tried to stop me from going in and doing the stunt fight. Peter Weir comes over and goes and looks at my eye and goes, "Oh, that's wonderful. We'll have to get a close up of that."
Wow.
And, we went through the entire fight, and Russell Crowe fought 26 people without a stunt double, and it was incredible, great movie.
Yeah, tremendous. Well, another great movie we need to talk about on our episode here is more recent. It's a great little action movie, Blindsided the Game. It's a Zatoichi, Blind Fury type of homage. I spoke to Clay and Eric and just this morning David. How did you come to work on Blindsided?
I got a call from Clayton Barber and Eric Jacobus, and Clayton and I have known each other for 20 plus years. We came up in the ranks in the trenches, doing stunt work together and crashing through stuff and, getting the living daylights beaten out of us on martial law every week. We did a lot of work together and we were good friends, and I'd never worked with Eric before, but Eric and I knew of each other, and I was always a big fan and really wanted to work with him. So, we got the chance. They both talked to me about the fact that they were going to be doing Zatoichi style cane, sword work, and would I be interested in helping them design some of the props and the sword cane for the movie and getting, making sure that the swords were all right, and then wanting help choreographing the sword fights.
Right.
And taking Eric through some sword training.
Yeah.
And so I said, absolutely, man, I'm in 2,000%. And then on top of that, Eric, Clayton suddenly goes, and I want you as one of the characters in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And I went, okay, I'd love to. And Clayton just said, no, the person you are and the fact that I know you're an actor, I think that you're going to be an interesting part of this. And I said, okay. And so, Eric and I got together a bunch of times and worked out like mad dogs. And, I came up with drills for him. And Eric's job was really hard because he had to be cognizant of the Sword King, which he was gripping in reverse grip,
sort of
classic Batoichi style. But then we came up with the idea that, well, Walter uses his blindman's cane in the fights, so let's take the scabbard from the Sword King and hold that in forward grip, just like you're holding the cane, and use both those weapons for the entire fight.
No.
And that added an element of, you know, difficulty and made the fights a lot more complex.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, you know, Eric's got to be responsible for, you know, where two weapons are in the middle of choreography all the time while acting, you know, as if he's blind.
Yes.
So it you know, kudos to Eric because he really got put through the ringer. The fight and the choreo and the techniques were super hard, and Eric and David both did a brilliant, brilliant job with the fights.
It was just so electric. Like, I mean, I know it's not like you know, it's not a full length feature, but it was really, like I said to Clay and Eric when I watched it, I really was like, oh geez, is that it? I really kind of wanted it to keep going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing is that you know, Clayton and Eric got together and had this vision, and you know, and they put it together and they sat down and they worked it out. And I mean, you know, the more it developed and the more ideas they came up with and the more they solidified things, the project and the film and the story just got better and better and better and tighter and just more and more intense.
Yeah.
And as we went along, you know, Clayton and Eric just started finding these really great, interesting comedic moments that resonate. You know, they're great because they have... They're not subtle, but they are.
Yes.
And, you know, they come at great moments. I mean, the way everything's paced out and, you know, the awkward moments, the funny moments, the serious moments, they all just blend perfectly. And, you know, Clayton and Eric, you know, Eric's got a great sense of character, and Eric knows, you know, his own performance and the character work he does. You know, he comes up with brilliant characters in terms of their physicality. I swear to God that Eric is Buster Keaton reincarnated.
Right.
I really believe that. I mean, he's got this performance, comedic, physical brilliance that is just on par. It's just like Buster Keaton.
Yeah.
And Clayton, you know, really, really knew what he wanted to do with the storyline in this and the type of film he was making. And you know, the classic directors and style of movies that he was giving homages to.
Yes.
And even though he was giving homages to these classic movies that people have kind of forgotten, he wasn't copying them.
Yes.
Clayton was still making his movie and still being, you know, his own director,
which
was awesome about it. And it just, you know, it really, really, really developed and flowered. And it was just great while we were working on it to see that happening.
Yes. We always forget somewhere along the way that there are a lot of young cinema goers that haven't had our cinema going experience. Like, you know, I have seen, you know, I grew up with Zatoichi, and I've seen Blind Fury, and I've seen other versions of Zatoichi. So coming to, when something new comes along, it's like, well, I bring all that baggage with me. But we also oftentimes forget that there's a lot of young people are watching things online and movies that don't have any cinema going baggage, and they can just enjoy it for what it is. And for them, it's you know, it's fresh, it's exciting, the action is balletic, dynamic, and it has something new. It's something they haven't seen before. We might have seen something like it before, but they haven't. And I think that's something that people forget oftentimes. Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think absolutely. And I mean, the thing is that it's that blending of the new generation looking at things with a fresh eye,
yes,
and the older generation having this knowledge. And I think it's, you know, the beauty is in the blending of the two.
Yeah.
Where if somebody can absolutely enjoy something that's fresh and see that viewpoint of it, but then the older generation being able to say, hey, if you really, really love this, here's a couple of other classic things you should go back and take a look at now for inspiration.
Yeah.
Go back and take a look at these things now just to understand a different level of craftsmanship, because movies were made differently back then.
Yeah.
And to enrich any, you know, fan of film and fan of action, to be able to enrich their knowledge is a blessing all the way around.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, if we can bring the new and the fresh and the exciting, plus, you know, paying tribute to the old classics and re-educating a new generation, it's the best of both worlds.
So, Luke, you've been a busy boy throughout the years. It doesn't look like you're slowing down. Have you got a lot of cool things on the horizon for yourself? Or?
Yeah, I have to say that I've been very, very fortunate in that things have really sort of picked up, and I've been extremely busy. I've been doing work back-to-back almost with the very, very talented Scott Atkins, and that's, you know, bloomed into a great relationship. I love Scott. He's a great, great guy. And just one of the most amazing performers, you know, in the industry today.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was fortunate enough to be able to go and choreograph for him on Savage Dog and choreograph some pieces for him on Accident Man. And the newest film that we've got premiering actually this Tuesday is the film The Debt Collector, directed by Jesse V. Johnson.
Wow.
And starring Scott and Louis Mandelor. And I was lucky enough to be the action director on that.
Wow.
And you know, we really, really kind of tried to pull all the stops out, and we've done something a little different with Scott's fights. We're trying to give, you know, a different, you know, show Scott in a different light, and he's still just as talented and doing his amazing, you know, amazing stuff, but the fight style is a little different. We're adding, you know, a little bit more, you know, we're letting Scott stretch more into like comedic acting and stuff, and he's brilliant. I mean, him and Louis are amazing together. And I was also able to do some work on Triple Threat, which is going to be coming out hopefully at the end of the summer.
Cool.
With, again, Scott Atkins, Mike Jai White, Tony Ja, Eco Ace, and I got to, you know, and Tiger Chen. I got to choreograph a fight between Tiger Chen and Michael Bisping for that one that I'm very proud of.
Awesome.
And like I said, you know, we're just trying to stay busy and got a couple other things in the pipeline.
That's good. Always good to hear. Mate, you've done so much. In The Karate Kid, you've got, I'm sure, hundreds of Southland tales. But from this master and commander on the far side of the world, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, Luke, and everything you're doing, everything you've got in the pipeline, and I hope it all goes well for you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and thanks for having me on.
Welcome. It's been absolutely wonderful to talk to Luke LaFontaine. The film that we are talking about is Blind Side of the Game. It's out there at the moment. Please check it out. It's a great throwback as well as something new and exciting. It's Zatoichi, it's Blind Fury, but it is its own wonderful little action animal as well. Luke LaFontaine, thank you very much for being on Podcast Them Softly.
Welcome. Thanks. It was a pleasure for me, and I hope everybody checks out Blindside of the Game.
Totally. Thank you, mate. Have a good evening.